make sure that people understand that, you know, we're going to rebuild New Orleans. We're going to rebuild the Gulf Coast, and the government is going to be a very active partner in doing that and providing the leadership. I think the one thing I was struck with, Dave, last night is this really is going to consume most of President Bush's domestic agenda for the next 3 years. I think we are not going to see a president who is ever going to have a moment or a day that he's not consumed with the rebuilding of the Gulf Coast and New Orleans.
Barbara O'Connor, do you share that Bill Kerik's assessment that this is one of those moments that will define in many ways the second term of George W. Bush?
No, I absolutely do. And I give him credit for not just making it about rebuilding buildings. I think he was courageous in taking on the whole cycle of poverty and opportunities for the less fortunate in the Gulf States.
Already slashed the David Bacon Act. We already know what's going on, and whose land is it going to be ripped off from? The stolen land that Hurricane Sam blew its flood waters all over. In other words, the poor. This is how the game is played. You guys are just spin master talk. And then you had the nerd to talk about how he's going to be consumed with a domestic agenda. He's always been consumed with a domestic agenda, just like an international one. Serve the rich, serve the elite, cut the taxes, crush the poor, jail the poor, toss out the immigrants. This is how the game is played. Well, it's time that we play another game and fight back against the beast, because this is truly what is a version. You know what time it is. Slave time. Check it out. Berkeley, 101.1 with Skidmark in Santa Cruz, 107.5 North Carolina, Uprising Radio, LUVER.com, The World, RadioForAll.net, The Universe. Click into the Slave Web, go Slave Revolt Radio, Google, find out what time it is. Tonight, we're going to deal with the beast as it is emerging in New Orleans. So we got all that and a hell of a lot more on 103.3. Slave Revolt. Black people locked in a giant darkening vessel, not knowing when or if they'll be fed or let out, with shivering, wide-eyed, frightened black mothers holding their crying babies as confused, politically castrated black men stare blankly in the rotten, decayed, flesh feces-tainted air, just like in the days of old. The weak and old crumble before our eyes, yet the ship sails on in its New Orleans middle passage, just like in the days of old. The armed empire slave catchers stand guard to make sure no one escapes from the vessel. As slave master bids us off the different regions on Sam's plantation, while traumatized and unorganized slaves huddle in fear with no say where they're going to be taken on master slave coach. Just like in those days of old. Your wife is driven here, your daughter over there, your parents are taken to who knows where, your family is shattered and scattered all over the states. And master doesn't care, he understands what's at stake. Just like in those days of old. I now see how our foremothers and fathers looked as they were separated from kin, not knowing if they'd ever see them again. As certain neat, good Negroes play along with master's profit over human being rules without concern of its savage ramifications. Just like in those days of old. Those that could not make it through our New Orleans middle passes were left afloat in the capitalist stench waters. Only this time we are left for the crocodiles to feast upon instead of the sharks. But still, just like in those days of old. Is that a black body I see tied to that tree looking like a piece of strange fruit, just like in the days of old? And now wild rumors spread that us black heathens started eating one another while left to our own device. Rumors, just like in those days of old. And I heard the great white mother say that we slaves would be better off in Bastard's plantation in Houston than our own former home. Well, just like in those days of old. Now alas, some folks forced black into reality are setting up underground railways to relocate in New Orleans, Algiers neighborhood and beyond with some slave resistance as the slave hunters are given shoot-to-kill orders for any runaways caught making this trek. Just like in the days of old. So when the blood of slave master drips from my angry black hands, don't look at me with your non-violent, privileged, preaching, elitist attitude. Just look into my eyes and you'll see Harriet, Sinque, Fred Douglas, Toussaint, Nat Turner, the Zands, the Maroons, the Seminoles, and you'll realize that like them, I'm a slave in revolt. Just like in the days of old. This time we won't stop till it's finished. people have referred to it as the secret government of the United States. It is not an elected body. It does not involve itself in public discourses. And it even has a quasi-secret budget in the billions of dollars. This government organization has more power than the President of the United States or the Congress. It has the power to suspend laws, move entire populations, arrest and detain citizens without a warrant, and hold them without trial. It can seize property, food supplies, transportation systems, and can suspend the Constitution. Not only is it the most powerful entity in the United States, but it was not even created under constitutional law by the Congress. It was the product of a presidential order. No, it is not the U.S. military nor the Central Intelligence Agency. They are subject to Congress. The organization is called FEMA, which stands for the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Originally conceived in the Richard and Nixon administration, it was refined by President Jimmy Carter and given teeth in the Ronald Reagan and Bush administration. FEMA had one original concept when it was created, to assure the survivability of the United States government in the event of a nuclear attack on this nation. It was also provided with the task of being a federally coordinating body during times of domestic disasters, such as earthquakes, floods, and hurricanes. Its awesome powers grow under the tutelage of people like Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North and General Richard Secord, the architects of the Iran-Contra scandal and the looting of America's saving and loans institutions. FEMA has been given control of the state's defense, a ragtag, often considered neo-Nazi civilian army that will substitute for the National Guard if the Guard is called to duties overseas. This is the beginning of an article written by Harry B. Martin, with a research assistant by David Call. It's called FEMA, the Secret Government. And we're going into a Beyond the Shadow segment that deals with this in FEMA, the Beast Has Landed in New Orleans. Continuing on with the article. Beyond, it may be the most powerful organization in the United States. Few people even know it exists, but it has crept into our private lives. Even mortgage papers contain FEMA's name in small print if the property in question is near a flood plain. FEMA has been deeply involved in the Los Angeles riots and the 1989 Loma Prieta earthquake in San Francisco Bay Area. Some of the black helicopter traffic reported throughout the United States, but mainly in the West, California, Washington, Arizona, New Mexico, Texaco, and Colorado, are flown by FEMA personnel. FEMA has been given responsibility for many new disasters, including urban forest fires, home heating emergency, refugee situations, urban riots, the emergency planning for nuclear and toxic incidents in the West. Its works is conjunction with the Sixth Army. FEMA was created in a series of executive orders, a presidential executive order, whether constitutional or not, becomes law simply by its publication in the Federal Register. Congress is bypassed. Executive Order Number 12148 created the Federal Emergency Management Agency that is to interface with the Department of Defense for civil defense planning and funding, and, quote, emergency czar, quote unquote, was appointed. FEMA has only spent about 6% of its budget on national emergencies. The bulk of their funding has been used for the construction of secret underground facilities to assure continuity of the government in case of a major emergency, foreign or domestic. Executive Order Number 12656 appointed the National Security Council as the principal body that should consider emergency powers. This allows the government to increase domestic intelligence and surveillance of U.S. citizens and would restrict the freedoms of movement within the United States and grant the government the right to isolate large groups of civilians. The National Guard could be federalized to seal all borders and take control of airspace and all ports. Now, let me comment on a couple of these things as we go on. As it went into, FEMA has been given control of the State Defense Forces, a ragtag, often considered neo-Nazi civilian army that will substitute for the National Guard if the Guard is called to duty overseas. Well, that's the case that we are currently dealing with. The National Guard is overseas. FEMA was there. But, see, their priorities is really to maintain order and to increase the order for the elite empire crusaders in and outside of these particular borders. Now they also go into how the National Guard could be federalized, though, to seal all borders and take control of U.S. airspace and all ports of entry. Now we're starting to see how these things are taking place should be looked into the context of an onslaught by the beast against the basic rights of the masses of people in New Orleans. Blackwater, National Guard, the various police departments, the militarization, the martialization that's taking place. Now here are just a few executive orders associated with FEMA that would suspend the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. These executive orders have been on record for nearly 30 years and could be enacted by the stroke of a presidential pen. Executive Order 10998 allows the government to take over all food resources and farms. Executive Order 11002 designates the Postmaster General to operate a national registration of all persons. Hold on, let me stop right there. Remember when they were telling all these evacuees in Houston that they can get a debit card for $2,000? It was all fake. Then, without these people knowing, they stopped issuing out the $2,000 and then were just registering people as they came to line expecting to get a debit card. This is part of their PSYOPs game and their way of locating, finding out where people are located, and putting them within the system, within the matrix. Executive Order 11004 allows the Housing and Finance Authority to relocate communities. Relocate communities. Build new housing with public funds. Designate areas to be abandoned and establish new locations for population. This is just another form of spatial deconcentration, which we are under siege now and resisting in New Orleans at this very moment. This is the beast in operation. Executive Order 11921 allows the Federal Emergency Preparedness Agency to develop plans to establish control over the mechanisms of production and distribution of energy sources, wages, salaries, credit, and the flow of money in the United States. Financial institutions in any undefined national emergency. It also provides that when a state of emergency is declared by the president, Congress cannot review the actions for 6 months. Executive Order 10995 allows the government to seize and control the communications media. Now, with that in context, let's go to what happened with Tish Stringer, part of the Houston Indie Media Network, when they were trying to set up at the Houston Astrodome, but got turned down by you know who.
Last night's situation with our attempt to set up a micro radio broadcasting inside Houston's Astrodome for the people that have been displaced from New Orleans and relocated to Houston inside the Astrodome complex. We, as you said, we did have FCC approval. We had all kinds of amazing coalitions of support from government, grassroots media activists, corporations who wanted to provide radios. It was an amazing outpouring of support that was stymied by temporary quasi-government, if you will, in the Astrodome. Today we went and reapplied for a second time through FEMA with their paperwork, and yesterday we had asked for, when we applied yesterday, what we asked for was a table, electricity, telephone lines, internet high up in the building, and they had said we can't provide that, and we said we would run self-sufficiently. They said no. Today we reapplied asking just for a table. Today we said all we want is a table in the Astrodome. We'll provide everything else, our own electricity, phone lines, everything, and again we were denied as of 6:30 tonight. So it looks like it's not going to happen for Micro Rodeo and Astrodome, which is such a sad, sad story. And again, listening to the stories of from New Orleans and thinking about how much it's important that we continue to have our own community resources and develop grassroots and stay in the grassroots, because this engagement with bureaucracy fails because bureaucracy is a failure. And that's the lesson I've learned again for the thousandth time, that we tried every possible way to be as legitimate and as possible legally and partnering with government and corporations, which is in itself an odd move for me to be doing, and it, you know, it didn't work.
It didn't work because it's not designed to work. This is literally part of the beast apparatus. This is not hyperbole. This is part of the order in its most vile and vicious way. FEMA is part of the operational tool of control designed by the empire. They didn't even bother with all the constitutional, you know, rhetoric and stuff. So all of this illusion that many have about going the right route and all of this and playing by the rules. This is the real deal. These cats ain't playing. Their rules are designed to hamper. Now, fortunately, some cats just went up ahead and just broadcast like they should have days earlier, who were down there, you know, in Houston. Even though much time was lost and many people had left by then, you know, it's still good that it happened, that the camp radio site is set up there. But we have to understand what we're facing. And FEMA is literally part of the beast apparatus. Literally. Now continuing on with this article. We go to the aspect where it says, the Federal Emergency Management Agency has broad powers in every aspect of the nation. General Frank Scalazzo, chief of FEMA's Civil Security Division, stated in 1983 conference that he saw FEMA's role as a, quote, new frontier in the protection of individual and governmental leaders from assassination of civil and military installations, from sabotage and or attack, as well as prevention of dissident groups from gaining access to U.S. public opinion or a global audience in times of crisis. FEMA's power consolidated by President Carter to incorporate, one, the National Security Act of 1947, which allows for the strategic relocation of industry, service, government, and other essential economic activities to rationalize the requirements for the manpower, resources, and production of facilities. Two, the 1950 Defense Production Act, which gives the president sweeping powers over all aspects of the economy. Three, the Act of August 29, 1916, which authorizes the Secretary of the Army in time of war to take possession of any transportation systems for transporting troops, material, or any other purpose related to the emergency. And three, four, the International Emergencies Economic Powers Act, which enables the president to seize the property of a foreign country or national. Now, these powers were transferred to FEMA in a sweeping consolidation in 1979. This was under President Carter, Democrat. Never again allow anyone to even remotely talk this nonsense about lesser of two evils. I mean, we've been beyond that for years. It never really existed in the real. But now, there's just no time for such nonsense. Continuing on with the article, Hurricane Andrew focused attention on FEMA. FEMA's deceptive role really did not come to light with much of the public until Hurricane Andrew smashed into the U.S. mainland. As Russell Dines, director of the Disaster Research Center of the University of Delaware, wrote in The World and I, quote, "The eye of the political storm hovered over the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, became a convenient target for criticism," unquote. Because FEMA was accused of dropping the ball in Florida, the media and Congress commenced to study this agency. What came out of the critical look was that FEMA was spending 12 times more for, quote, black operations, unquote, than for disaster relief. It spent $1.3 billion building secret bunkers throughout the United States in anticipation of government disruption by foreign or domestic upheaval. Yet fewer than 20 members of Congress, only members with top security clearance, know of the $1.3 billion expenditure by FEMA for non-natural disaster situations. These few congressional leaders state that FEMA has a black curtain, quote-unquote, around its operations. FEMA has worked on national security programs since 1979, and its predecessor, the Federal Emergency Preparedness Agency, has secretly spent millions of dollars before being merged into FEMA by President Carter in 1979. FEMA has developed 300 sophisticated mobile units that are capable of sustaining themselves for a month. The vehicles are located in five areas of the United States. They have tremendous communication systems, and each contains a generator that would provide power of 120 homes, but have never been used for disaster relief. All right, let me stop right there. This once again shows how this thing is being prioritized. Now, this year, it was announced, this year, this is not in the article I'm talking about, this is 2005, that FEMA is to, quote, officially, unquote, lose the disaster preparedness function that it had been part of since its creation. The move is a death blow to the agencies that was already on life support, they claim, but not really. See, life support from the mere pretense of being a disaster, quote-unquote, relief organization. But all of these other apparatus of control, of suspension of the Constitution, etc., are all within FEMA's apparatus. They just merged some of those so-called disaster relief coordination things with the Homeland Security. But FEMA still retains much of its core power of being able to suspend and sabotage many of the basic rights of citizens within this country. Now it comes into context when last week on the Prophets of Misery, Prophets of Doom, Hurricane Sam 3 series, where we went into the guy with from Jefferson Parish who was talking about how FEMA was cutting his communication lines and sabotaging his operations that they were doing during the relief effort. And he was, you know, thrown off. Why? We see why. They're intentionally trying to cause disruption. They're part of the black ops operation that's designed to take advantage for this. The beast has landed in New Orleans. Now also, you have a situation where there was an article that in the Chicago Tribune where it goes into crew of Navy ship ready to play larger role in relief efforts on board the U.S. Batson. While federal and state emergency planners, and this was Saturday, September 3rd. This is right in the eye, in the middle of all of the chaos going on. While federal and state emergency planners scrambled to get more military relief, the federal coast community stricken by Hurricane Katrina, i.e. Sam, a massive naval goodwill station, has been cruising offshore, underutilized and waiting for a larger role in the effort. The USS Bataan, an 844-foot ship designed to dispatch U.S. Marines in amphibious assaults, has helicopters, doctors, hospital beds, food, and water. It can also make its own water, up to 100,000 gallons a day, and it just happened to be in the Gulf of Mexico when Katrina came roaring ashore. The Bataan rode out the storm and then followed it toward shore, awaiting relief orders. Helicopter pilots flying from its deck were some of the first to begin plucking stranded New Orleans residents. But today, the Bataan hospital facilities, including six operating rooms and beds for 600 patients, are empty. A good share of its 1,200 sailors could also go ashore to help with the relief effort, but they haven't been asked. The Bataan has been in the stricken region the longest of any military unit, but federal authorities have yet to fully utilize the ship. Quote, could we do more? Unquote, said Captain Nora Tyson, commander of the Bataan. Quote, sure, I got sailors who could be on the beach plucking through garbage or distributing water and food and stuff, but I can't force myself on people. We're doing everything we can to contribute right now, and we're ready. If someone says you need to take on people, we're ready. If they say hospitals on beaches can't handle it, if they need to send the overflow out here, we're ready. We got lots of rooms. Unquote. So here you have a situation where there's no way that FEMA and Homeland and Boy George and all of them did not know about this. They were intensifying the misery. It became part of a psych ops, which FEMA plays a role in. A deadly role in. Continuing on with the FEMA article. FEMA's enormous powers can be triggered easily in any form of domestic or foreign problem, perceived and not always actual. Emergency powers can be enacted. The President of the United States now has broader powers to declare martial law, which activates FEMA's extraordinary powers. Martial law can be declared during time of increased tensions overseas, economic problems within the United States, such as a depression, civil unrest, such as demonstrations or scenes like the Los Angeles riots, and in the drug crisis. These presidential powers have increased with successive crime bills, particularly the 1991 and 1993 crime bills, which increased the power to suspend the right guaranteed under the Constitution and to seize property or those suspected of being drug dealers, to individuals who participate in a public protest or demonstration. Under emergency plans already in existence, the power exists to suspend the Constitution and turn over the reins of government to FEMA, and appointing military commanders to run state and local governments. FEMA then would have the right to order the detention of anyone whom there is a reasonable ground to believe will engage in or probably conspire with others to engage in acts of espionage or sabotage. The plan also authorizes the establishment of concentration camps for detaining the accused, but no trial. Now, with that in mind, let's go to Jeremy Scahill, who's written some things on Blackwater and some of the other aspects that are going on. But let's focus in on what he's talking about with the detaining aspects of people. Check it out.
main thing that people are concerned about in the human rights community, not just in New Orleans, but in Louisiana and elsewhere in the country, is the fate of the prisoners in this state. And of course, Louisiana is infamous for its treatment of prisoners and the sort of southern justice, so to speak. And there have been all sorts of stories floating around about what has happened to the prisoners, about some prisoners drowning, others being totally unaccounted for, and what the, for lack of a better term, the authorities in New Orleans have done is to set up a sort of makeshift prison where they're taking people that they arrest on all sorts of charges. They call it looting. A lot of it is people who were desperately trying to take food, diapers, medicine, anything they could get their hands on as this devastating hurricane hit them. And so they are taking them to the Amtrak and Greyhound terminal that is in downtown New Orleans, and they've made this into a sort of prison where they're stuffing people into the terminal. And a colleague of mine, an independent photographer, was involved with a car accident last night that happened to be in the other car, police officers, though the car was unmarked. And they arrested him and took him into custody, and they told him that they were going to stick him in the trunk. And he felt that his life was being threatened, and then they put him in jail, and then we mobilized, and we were able to get him free at 5 o'clock. But he spent the night in Camp Greyhound, said it was a very frightening scene in there, and that there is just teeming with people.
All right, so what is this? I mean, look, see, basically, they installed this martial law, which this Democratic Negro was screaming for. And others, like Blanco and all of that, once they get that apparatus in, all these various powers, FEMA, Homeland Security, they go in full-blown operation. FEMA had been sabotaging operations and looking the other way and not accepting relief and pretending like it was confused and didn't know what was going on and all of that, to basically intensify the chaos to then justify, under people's illusion about the state, the call for the martial law. The corporate media plays in from their angle, especially in the beginning, with focusing in on riots, looting, to give the image of the black heathens being out of control so that the beast can operate its martial law apparatus to quote-unquote get things into control. But what this all ends up working for is the structural control of the empire and the elites as the beast lands on the shore, literally. This is how horrific and how these things play out. And this is how it was designed to play out once they can intensify and magnify the natural disaster into the Hurricane Sam scenario, which is exactly what they've done. Now let's continue on with the article, FEMA article. 3 times since 1984, FEMA stood on the threshold of taking control of the nation. Once under President Reagan in 1984 and twice under President Bush in 1990 and 1992. But under those three scenarios, there was not a significant crisis to warrant risking martial law. Most experts on the subject of FEMA and martial law insist that a crisis has to appear dangerous enough for the people of the United States before they would tolerate or accept complete government takeover. The typical crisis needed would be threat of imminent nuclear war, rioting in several U.S. cities simultaneously, a series of national disasters that affect widespread danger to the populace, massive terrorist attacks, a depression in which tens of millions are unemployed and without financial resources, or a major environmental disaster. Now, this, as we've gone over in the Hurricane Sam first series about how this whole thing was played up and intensified by the crushing of the levees or the crushing of the wetlands, the shuck and jive game that they've done on the levees as far as taking money out of construction and proper construction of the levees to fund their imperialist war in Iraq, so on and so forth, this whole thing collapses out Then you have FEMA step in, which, as I went over earlier, since this year, they are not even involved, or they've been gutted from being involved in disaster type of relief stuff. Now, what the average raggedy Democrat and Republican will try to bicker over is whether or not they need more funding for disaster relief, and do they need better henchmen to lead the charge. But all this black ops stuff, which is what they're really all about, and they know about because of the previous hurricane, Hurricane Katrina, when they themselves found all these black operations and money being spent in the billions that had nothing to do with disaster relief or prevention or preparedness or anything else. They're building shelters and stuff. This is the beast in operation. So all of these clowns in the Democrat, Republican, etc., they're playing a little psyops game themselves to get you off kilter and not let you realize how dangerous and serious this situation is. Now, continuing on with the article, FEMA. In April 1984, President Reagan signed Presidential Directive Number 54 that allowed FEMA to engage in a secret national readiness exercise, quote unquote, under the code name of Rex 84. The exercise was to test FEMA's readiness to assume military authority in the event of a, quote, state of domestic national emergency, unquote. Concurrent with the launching of a direct United States military operation in Central America, the plan called for the deputation of U.S. military and National Guard units so that they could legally be used for domestic law enforcement. We see that going on right now. We even see it going on within the mercenary groups like Blackwater, as they've been deputized, continuing with the article. These units would be assigned to conduct sweeps and take into custody an estimated 400 undocumented Central American immigrants in the United States. The immigrants would be interned at 10 detention centers to be set up at military bases throughout the country. Now, let me stop right there. We've seen and heard about the patrols of these various immigrant agencies and stuff in coordination in New Orleans and how they're terrorizing the Honduran, as Scahill continues on from here.
We were just talking yesterday to the consular officer of the government of Honduras, who is here in Baton Rouge, and he said that officially there are 80,000 Hondurans in the New Orleans area, but that if you take into account those Hondurans who do not have so-called legal papers to be in this country, undocumented immigrants, then that number can swell to as high as 140,000 Hondurans. There are people from many other Central American nations as well, and there's a very vibrant Central American community in this area that goes back centuries to the banana trade and the port in Louisiana. And so there's a long tradition of Hondurans in particular residing in New Orleans.
So we see once again that this type of stuff is just not people being insensitive from the standpoint of, oh, look at them taking advantage. This is the beast unleashing its tentacles. And FEMA is a core part of that. In New Orleans, the beast has landed. Now, Rex 84 was so highly guarded that special metal security doors were placed on the fifth floor of the FEMA building in Washington, D.C. Even long-standing employees of the Civil Defense of the Federal Executive Department possessing the highest possible security clearances were not being allowed through the newly installed metal security doors. Only personnel wearing a special red Christian cross or crucifix lapel pin were allowed into the premises. Lieutenant Colonel North was responsible for drawing up the emergency plan, which U.S. Attorney General William French Smith opposed vehemently. The plan called for the suspension of the Constitution, turning control of the government over to FEMA, appointment of military commanders to run state and local governments in a declaration of martial law. The presidential executive order to support such a plan was already in place. The plan also advocated the rounding up and transfer to, quote, assembly centers or relocation camps, unquote, of at least 21 million American Negroes in the event of massive rioting or disorder, not unlike the rounding up of the Jews in Nazi Germany in the 1930s. The beast has landed. Continuing on with the article, the second known time that FEMA stood by was in 1990 when Desert Storm was enacted. Prior to President Bush's invasion of Iraq, FEMA began to draft new legislation to increase its already formidable powers. One of the elements incorporated into the plan was to set up operations within any state or locality without the prior permission of local or state authorities. Such prior permission has always been required in the past. Much of the mechanism being set into place was in anticipation of the economic collapse of the Western world. The war with Iraq may have been conceived as a ploy to boost the bankrupt economy, but it only pushed the West into deeper recession. Let me hold right there for a sec. Once again, it's clear that the whole capital market order, as I've been saying for a while, is in crisis. But these shock troops of the empire are not just going to let it collapse and then people seize, you know, power or anything, or turn into a new direction. They have another beast apparatus that they plan on employing. Continuing on with the article, the third scenario for FEMA came with the LA riots after the Rodney King brutality verdict. Had the rioting spread to other cities, FEMA would have been employed to step in. As it was, major rioting only occurred in the LA area, thus preventing a pretext for a FEMA response. On July 5, 1987, the Miami Herald published reports on FEMA's new goals. The goal was to suspend the Constitution in the event of a national crisis, such as nuclear war, violent and widespread internal dissent, or national opposition to a U.S. military invasion abroad. Lieutenant Colonel North was the architect. National Security Directive No. 52 issued in August 1982 pertains to the use, to the, quote, use of National Guard troops to quell disturbances, quote unquote. Now with that aspect, let's go into how Scahill talks about, in New Orleans, the Beast military zone that is set up.
New Orleans is very much a militarized zone right now. It reminds me of Kosovo right before NATO came in. The streets are largely empty except for paramilitary-type figures roaming around, as well as camouflaged soldiers from the National Guard or the active U.S. Army. Martial law has been declared in the city itself. And we're seeing more and more troops pulling in, and I still have only seen one FEMA vehicle the entire time I've been here, almost a week. I have seen a total of one FEMA vehicle, but I've seen every possible unit of the United States Armed Forces not passing out food, walking around with guns. I've seen paramilitary thugs not passing out medicine, walking around with guns. I've seen Immigration and Naturalization Service border agents riding around in an obvious effort to intimidate immigrants out of getting help, not passing out food, but walking around and driving around with guns and acting like thugs. This is an outrage, what is happening right now. We are looking at a overt attempt to shift the population of a proud African-American black city in this country. And this is an attempted takeover of New Orleans.
Now within that context of what's going on, so you can see how the whole operation basically is to protect the elites maneuvering as they're trying to reconstruct a new Orleans, depleted of its primarily black population, to safeguard the prophets of doom corporations that now have their tentacles all in there. Now, the fact that you don't see a whole lot of FEMA is because FEMA is part of a tentacle apparatus that's pulling a lot of the levers, that like Homeland Security, to many of the procedures that are going on. And now in an even more privatized, militarized setup that we have that is advanced since the 80s and even the 90s, where you have the Black Waters and all of that apparatus, you see that they play the role of the brown shirts goose-stepping in for the beast, whose apparatus that's at the various helms. This is how vicious things are going on. So they're setting up a thing where they're not going to tolerate any real opposition to how New Orleans is being viewed in the future to look like. And the apparatus where, like last show, I went into how the old line families have already met in Dallas, how they're already setting up things. There were thousands of people in Houston who were these little mercenary realtors who were going through this instructional stuff about how to get this particular property and what to basically try to say to destitute Ninth Ward people who are, you know, in a psychological crisis right now. So you're going to have these vultures hovering around them, trying to manipulate them to just give up their property at no price, basically, et cetera, et cetera, so that they could just move in these various operations. Another one of these old line family members has already truckloaded in loads of Latins from Mexico or Mexicans from Houston, and has them already working and clearing out certain areas. Now, here's a situation where a population that is from that area is being excluded from participating in any form or way as much as possible, because this is the population that they don't want to relocate. And they're using various intimidation mechanisms to keep people out. And now you can see how the dispersal of people throughout the country was all part of the apparatus. While FEMA was telling all of these different countries are dragging its feet, quote unquote, you know, from receiving aid from Cuba, Venezuela, on down, you know, countries throughout Europe, et cetera, et cetera. What it was doing was setting up its psychops operation of letting people exist in more and more horrible, starved out conditions, becoming more and more desperate, and then flinging them out to no human land. This is how they're running their operation. This is not some stumbling, you know, confused thing going on. This is intentional. Now, let's continue on with the FEMA article. The crux of the problem is that FEMA has the power to turn the United States into a police state in the time of a real crisis or a manufactured crisis. Lieutenant Colonel North virtually established the apparatus for dictatorship. Only the criticism of the Attorney General prevented the plans from being adopted, but intelligence reports indicate that FEMA has a folder with it with 22 executive orders for the president to sign in case of an emergency. It is believed that those executive orders contain the framework of North's concepts, delayed by criticism, but never truly abandoned. Let me hold stop right there. Now, we've seen some of these things absorbed within the Homeland Security and the Patriot Act, how that emerged so quick. See, these guys have been working on this. These are the beast disciples, the beast architects. They're real living human beings that are at the operational helm working for the order. Continuing on with the article. The crisis, as the government now sees it, is civil unrest. For generations, the government was concerned with nuclear war. But the violent and disruptive demonstrations that surrounded the Vietnam War era prompted President Nixon to change the direction of the emergency powers from wartime to times of domestic unrest. Diana Reynolds, program director of the Edward Morrow Center, summed up. The dangers of FEMA today and the public reaction to martial law in a drug crisis. Quote, it was James Madison's worst nightmare that a righteous faction would someday be strong enough to sweep away the constitutional restraints designed by the framers to prevent the tyranny of centralized power, excessive privilege, and arbitrary government authorities over the individual. These restraints, the balancing and checking of power among branches and layers of government, and the civil guarantees would be the first casualties in a drug-induced national security state, with Reagan's civil emergency preparedness unleashed. Nevertheless, there would be those who would welcome NSC, National Security Councils, into the drug fray, believing that increased police state powers to emergency levels is the only way left to fight Americans' enemy within. In the short run, a national security state would probably be a relief to those whose personal security and quality of life has been diminished by drugs or drug-related crime. And as the general public watches the progression of institutional chaos and social decay, they too may be willing to pay the ultimate price. One drug-free America for 200 years of democracy. Unquote. The first targets in any FEMA emergency would be Hispanics and blacks. The FEMA orders call for them to be rounded up and detained. Tax protesters, demonstrators against government military intervention outside U.S. borders, and people who maintain weapons in their homes are also targets. Let me stop right there. I don't even need to go into the aspect of the black and Latin aspect of this whole aspect. This has always been fairly obvious. But this highlights clearly, once again, like the black and Latin aspect, the role of arms within a society and the way that the state really frowns upon it. Now, of course, they play into the good old boy, southern redneck type stuff and all of that, but that's all just an illusion. In reality, they want a population disarmed. They want it cowering under because they know how fierce they're coming after the population and how unstable the whole economic situation is within the world capitalist structures. Now, with that in mind, there was an aspect where they were trying to get people to, they were forcing people to leave, and then they were just trying to intimidate people. But now, it has come out that in New Orleans, the city is confiscating even legally registered weapons from civilians. Private mercenary Blackwater patrol the streets with their little M16s and other forms of, assault weapons. But police commissioner Eddie Compass said this, quote, only law enforcement are allowed to have weapons. So while, of course, Bush and the Republicans play into this whole thing of respecting the Second Amendment and all of that, and then the Democrats get into this game that they're for gun control because it saves lives and all of that type of stuff. The one aspect that they never talk about controlling the guns is from the beast, the state, the Blackwaters, the mercenaries, the police, because they believe in state control. And all of that whole smoke and mirrors game about, respect for the Second Amendment by, Republicans and things of that nature, it's all a con job. Also, one of the Blackwater guys commented how, quote, this is a trend. You're going to see a lot more guys like us in these situations. Now, he's talking about domestic situations. And as I said before, Blackwater is now part of the law enforcement apparatus, quote unquote, of New Orleans. They've been deputized. So here you have private mercenaries that have broad ranges of power, martial law set in, and these mercenaries who are hired guns by the elite, by corporations, you know, to guard property and so on and so forth, are now deputized by the state. Like brown shirts, the beast has landed. Now let's continue on with the article. As I said, tax protesters, demonstrators against government military intervention outside U.S. borders, and people who maintain weapons in their homes are also targets. Operation Trojan Horse is a program designed to learn the identity of potential opponents to martial law. The program lures potential protesters into public forums conducted by a hero, quote-unquote, of the people who advocate survival training. The list of names gathered at such meetings and rallies are computerized and then targeted in case of emergencies. Now, this is why, once again, I was saying that this is the PSYOPS operation. Here they already have techniques of trying to lure people into particular forms of public protest so that they can gather the name and then, of course, round them up. These are people who are dissenting against their martial law apparatus. This shows you how clear they've thought this out. Also, what it does is it makes clear that, once again, there's too much focus on idiots like Boy George. The fact that he's an idiot is really immaterial, because there's been research and commitment by many people within the order's apparatus who are not idiots. They're sick, vicious, and barbaric, but they're not idiots. And they plan for various ways of undermining the basic rights of us. Now, continuing on as we finish up this article, the most shining example of America to the world has been its peaceful transition of government from one administration to another. Despite crises of great magnitude, the United States has maintained its freedom and liberty. This is this article. You know, let's not. This nation now stands on the threshold of rule by non-elected people asserting non-constitutional powers. Even Congress cannot review a martial law action until 6 months after it's been declared. For the first time in American history, the reins of government will not be transferred from one elected element to another, but the Constitution itself can be suspended. The scenarios established to trigger FEMA into action are generally found in society today. Economic collapse, civil unrest, drug problems, terrorist attacks, and protests against American intervention in a foreign country. All these premises exist. It could only be a matter of time in which one of these triggers the entire emergencies necessary to bring FEMA into action. And then it may be too late, because under the FEMA plan, there is no constituency by which constitutional power is restored. That's the end of the article. Once again, it's called FEMA, the Secret Government, by Harry B. Martin, with research assistant by David Paul. It was written in 1995. So as we can see, we need to understand what we're dealing with in a more complete way. because of how this beast apparatus is truly coming at us, and how it is not concerned in any way of really taking no prisoners. It's out for control. Now, let's go on to some of the other aspects of things that were taking place during that time to see how the beast was operating in various ways, its particular tentacles. Sham Shepard and Geraldo Rivera, they're both anchors for Fox News, right-wing quack. But they found themselves in the convention center and found themselves at a loss at why thousands of people were being left stranded to starve and crumble, collapse, dehydrate, in some of the most miserable concentration camp-like conditions. Let's check out this conversation that Sham Shepard and followed by Geraldo Rivera were having with Hannity and Combs. And these are right-wingers talking about what they noticed going on in day five or six of the beast and Hurricane Sam setting shores in New Orleans.
Spend tonight with their babies and their elderly, and they need help that they're not getting. That's the fact of New Orleans tonight, sir.
Chef, how many people are you talking about on the bridge there? Because we see now, as we're on the air here this hour, the images of the convoys going in, the armed guards going in, and you see the supplies going in. Why are they not getting to that specific location?
I don't know.
Yeah, but we know for a fact that there's... And how many people specifically are there?
Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. See, the thing is, people don't know where to go now. They're not being told where to go. 2 days ago, I was on that same bridge next to 235 saying there were thousands of people there then who didn't know where to go. They went to the Superdome. They were told no. The federal government finally stepped up and said, no, don't go to the Superdome. But they weren't told where to go. So they sit there. It may be because they were worried about chaos in other places if too many people were gathered. There's just no answer to that question. It's one of the first stories I've ever covered where questions as simple as, why do the people on the easily accessible bridge not get food and water and don't even get instructions of where to go to get food and water and medical attention? It's the first time I've ever not known the answer to that, and I'm not sure there is an answer.
Chef Allen, where do you go to get those answers? Who's in charge? Who do you ask? Where do you go to get information?
I don't know, Sean. There's a command center here, and I guarantee you they're doing their dead level best with what they have to work with. There are lots and lots of rescue workers in town. There's lots of food, but there are lots of people who are not getting it. And why is that? I wish I knew, Alan and Sean. I don't know.
Are volunteers needed? Is anything people can do to help? The more people needed there to help distribute?
If there are hundreds of people on bridges and on freeways who are living outside with tiny babies who aren't getting formula and elderly people who need medicine, yes, they are needed. How can you help? I think the answer is to send money to relief organizations. But you know, I don't want to sound, you know, crazy about this tonight, but Alan and Sean, we've seen this, and we can smell it. And I don't know.
All right, Shep Smith in New Orleans tonight. Thanks, Shep. And joining us now from outside the convention center in New Orleans is our very own Geraldo Rivera, who's on the ground from earlier today. Geraldo.
Sean, I can't emphasize what Shep just said enough. He said it exactly right. There's no earthly answer that anyone can understand why these people, after 6 days, are still in this filthy, filthy, miserable convention center. Why are they still here? There's the freeway here. I tell you what I would have done. I would say, let them walk out of here. Let them walk away from the filth. Let them walk away from the devastation. Let them walk away from the dead bodies in here. They say they're on the second floor in the freezer. I've been on the first floor. It's like Willowbrook in there. I'm telling you, Sean and Alan, this is, you cannot deny that it's 6 days since this natural disaster befell New Orleans. What has happened since is as bad or worse than what Mother Nature did. It's just I can't understand that. I've only been here in Louisiana for less than a day. I left New York yesterday. But coming to the convention center, it is as if time stopped. It's as if I'm back and it's Wednesday. I saw Fox News on Wednesday, and people were here at this building, the convention center, saying, get us out of here. Help us. Help us. And now it's 48 hours after that, and the people are still here. None of them. As far as I know, not a single one has been bust out of here. They're all still here. Why is that? I wish I knew. I wish someone could tell me. Where are the buses? There are so many buses. Where are the, you know, we had a flight 159 fighter wing. Louisiana came down, and they were bringing in doctors and medical supplies and taking off the MREs out of the helicopters. But none of the people are there. Look at this. Look at this little baby. There's so many little babies. Can I get here? How old is this baby? 15 months. Okay. I got a baby. You know I have a baby. And you see, there are so many babies here. It's just not. I mean, it's not. You know, it's not a question of objects. It's a question of reality. This is the UK. How do you? I don't know, man. I don't. Let them walk out of here. Let them walk the hell out of here. Let them get on that interstate and walk out. Walk someplace. Walk to the Walmart on the other side of the river. Walk to some other town. Walk someplace where you can help them. All you got here is thousands and thousands of people who have desperate, desperate needs. 6 days later, they're feeling the same clothes. Where do you think they go to the bathroom? They don't wash their hands. They don't wash their face, these babies. What the hell?
All right, Geraldo, hang on right there. Chef, we go back to Shepard. Smith is also in New Orleans. Shepard.
They won't let them walk out of there because I'm standing right above that convention center. And what they've done is they've locked them in there. The government said, you go here and you'll get help. Or you go in that Superdome and you'll get help. And they didn't get help. They got locked in there and they watched people being killed around them. And they watched people starving and they watched elderly people not get any medicine. And now they know it's happening because we've been telling them repeatedly, over and over every day. And you know what they're doing now? And I'm not blaming anyone. I'm telling you what's happening. They have set up a checkpoint at the bottom of this bridge. This is the bridge that takes you from New Orleans over into Gretna, from Orleans Parish into Jefferson's Parish. It's the only way out. It's the connection to the rest of the world. And they've set up a checkpoint, and anyone who walks up out of that city now is turned around. You are not allowed to go to Gretna, Louisiana from New Orleans, Louisiana. Over there, there's hope. Over there, there's electricity. Over there, there's food and water. But you cannot go from there to there.
I think
the government will not allow you to do it. It's a fact.
I want to get some perspective here, because earlier today, the images...
That is
all
perspective.
Hang on a second.
That is all the perspective you need.
Hang on a second. I want to get perspective in this sense. That earlier today, Fox was showing the images of the convoys, of the people getting in there. With the convoys, there was food, there was medicine, there was water, and there were supplies. So obviously, we are getting a lot closer than we were. So what is it going to take? What is the time frame, is anybody saying? And we're going to get that was going in there today to the people that you're talking about.
No idea.
Okay. Because that's what needs to be done. Obviously, it's clear that there is an effort.
You hit the nail on the head. We've been saying that's what needs to be done every day. Everyone here knows that's what needs to be done. I'm sure every caring human being who's out here volunteering his time, or who wears a badge for a living because he loves his fellow man, or who goes out to fight fires because he loves his fellow man, wants people to get help, but they're not getting it.
All right, we'll go back to Geraldo. Geraldo, you're there?
Sean, look. Sean, just take a look. Take a look. I want everyone in the world to see 6 days after Katrina swept through this city, 5 days after the levee collapsed, this baby, how old is this baby?
10 months old.
And where's your missing twins?
Yes, this is my youngest grandson and this is their brother. We got separated.
All right, they're separate. I hope to God, I'm so glad they're not here. They're not here. They're not here at hell on earth. But here, hold this, honey. What's your name?
My name is Anna Lee.
Okay. Look in the face of the baby. This is it. This is it. No sugarcoating, no political spin, no Republicans or Democrats. People suffering. Let them go. Let them out of here. Let them go. Let them walk over this damn interstate and let them out of here.
All right. Thanks, Geraldo. Appreciate it. We appreciate it from New Orleans tonight. And we are now joined with an update from New Orleans International Airport from our own Anita Vogel is standing by. Anita.
All right, now, as you heard, as Shepard and Geraldo were saying, there was nothing wrong with the bridge that led to Gretna. But the government wouldn't allow the people out of the convention center. And also, there was a blockade on Gretna that didn't allow the people to go over to where there was electricity. The electricity was on. There was food. There was, you know, in other words, basically, Gretna is this white enclave primarily that basically had forces out that were not allowing people to make it over, just to even walk over the bridge. So here you had other parishes right within the region, within the walking distance, where people could have easily have made it and held camp and got situated. But FEMA and all of the BEAST apparatus was in operation, and it was terrifying and tormenting the people and letting them die and killing them at the same time, and putting them in a situation where they were spatially deconcentrating them out, at least the ones that survived. So here you have two right-wingers, and what basically happened was someone held the mirror up to Geraldo and Sam Shepard, and they were faced with the reflection of the beast that they protect, and they just broke down. I mean, that's the real world. That's what happened. Geraldo was broken to tears with the face of the empire, with the face of the beast. He looked at it for what it really was, at least for a while. Now, I'm sure, well, that's just what happened. Now, you have a situation where, Shepard was saying, they locked these people into the convention center, and people, elderly people, no medicine, what happens? They get sick and die, or sicker and die. People are dehydrating, so on and so forth. Yet, Gretna is right over the overpass. Now, there's no way that FEMA did not know about it. They knew what routes were open and what wasn't. But what were they, once the martial law was in place, then they have their various forces seal off the city, and then they turn it in as one person who was a senior commander spoke. He said that this was a quote, combat operation. And he talked about, quote, storming the convention center. Now, this is where people were in dire straits. But this is how the whole process of control was operating. And the elites and rich enclaves were making sure that the various state and local apparatus that are in their particular function of armed fist control, i.e. the police, were not allowing people to escape and come over into their particular neighborhoods. They wanted them out of the region altogether. And this is how all of these systems and apparatus converge. This is not some accident or anything like that. This is not just quote-unquote bumbling. As one person told the Orleans Times, quote, they're trying to get this neighborhood for the rich people. As another woman who ended up leaving her home during the evacuation, she said, quote, when you get 15 M16s pointed at you and they line you up against the wall, it's kind of scary. And she told the Washington Post this, explaining why she was leaving. Now, many of these people, especially like in the Algiers area and beyond, their homes were not devastated. It's not like they had to leave because of any kind of toxic crisis or anything like that. This was the order in operation. So this is all the aspects of moving on. Now, next, though, we're going to deal with a couple that Lori Ashansky and Larry Bradshaw. Now, he's a paramedic, and they're out of this area, Bay Area, but they were in New Orleans, and they explained their experiences of trying to cross this ramp into Gretna with other people who were primarily black people. They're not black. they go into in detail. Now, this is the same Gretna evacuation route over the ramp that Shepard was talking about that wasn't being allowed by the government. So let's hear what these two have to say about their particular experience as they, while they weren't in the convention center, because they knew how horrible that situation already was, they and other evacuees from New Orleans just tried to make it over the overpass.
People grabbed their families and what few belongings they had, and people had put their elderly in shopping carts. We had strollers and babies, and we just sort of had this little ragtag group of, I don't know, 800, 1,000?
800, 1,000. The streets were pretty well filled up, and this is where we determinedly marched up the on-ramp, and this is when it started to rain. It started to rain ferociously. And here we got so wet, but nonetheless, we were so excited that it doesn't matter, we're going to get to some buses. And as we approached the on-ramp,
we saw there were uniformed officers standing at the foot of the bridge, which we didn't think anything of it at first. And as we got closer, Lori Bath and I were sort of in the middle of the group, you know, trying to help some of the seniors and people that were having trouble walking. So we weren't at the front of the line. But before the front of the group even got within speaking distance, we later found out was the Gretna Sheriff's Department fired their guns over our head to stop us. And we heard all this shooting, and you were hearing gunfire on a regular basis, but to hear it so close, and we just thought it was coming from some other source. We had no idea it was coming from the police, but meanwhile, our group is now scattered and sort of running in all directions. And, you know, the words getting back to us, you know, what happened, that they're shooting at us.
And telling us we have to get off the on-ramp. We cannot go onto the on-ramp. We even held back for a while. And then after a bit, we decided to approach back up. And Larry, with his badge and our hands up, said, may we approach? And Larry had, they finally allowed him to approach, still with guns pointed right at us. And we had asked and explained, actually, that we were told by the police command center that we were supposed to, this is what our job was now, was to go to this on-ramp and pick up a bus to get out of New Orleans. And this is, he said,
told us that there were no buses across the bridge, and that there were no pedestrians going to be allowed across the bridge. So we tried to probe and find, I mean, this, remember, this is a freeway, like an interstate. It's like three lanes each direction, but it's not being used. There's a little bit of emergency traffic coming in from the south to the north, but in the way that we're going, I mean, there's like a car maybe every 5 minutes. I mean, there's like nobody on it. So we said, well, what's wrong with us, you know, orderly crossing the bridge? And the two comments we got from deputies were, one, we're not going to have a Superdome over here, and this is not New Orleans.
All right, so once again, it's clear what's happening. Here you have a situation where the police are blocking people from going into Gretna. Now, it'd be like a major earthquake or something happens in the Bay Area, and it primarily affects Oakland. And a lot of people are trying to walk across the Bay Bridge into San Francisco, which is just a bridge away. You know, you go from Oakland to San Francisco by crossing the Bay Bridge. Yet, all these armed forces for the San Francisco Police Department are shooting at people over their heads, at least, to stop them from coming over into San Francisco. Now, with all of this shooting and stuff going on, of course this is getting the attention of the state. Of course, various operations knew it, like FEMA, like Homeland Security. So, this was something that was not something that they disapproved of. This is something that was acceptable to them, because they would not have allowed these people just going around shooting, you know, in general. Of course they were going to send out to find out what was going on. My whole point is that FEMA had to have known that this operation was going on, but it fit right within the suppression of black people and the whole racial hierarchical construct that exist within this country and terrorizing the masses of black people. So you have this situation where the police are telling people to get off the on-ramp and shooting over their heads like, you know, some kind of Nazi vigilantes or something. Now, this is not even disputed. You have situations where in Gretna, Louisiana, an article has come out where it says Louisiana, a little over a week after the mostly white suburb became a symbol of callousness, were using armed officers to seal one of the last escape routes from New Orleans, trapping thousands of mostly black evacuees in the flooded city. The Gretna City Council passed a resolution supporting the police chief's move. Quote, "This wasn't just one man's decision," unquote. Mayor Ronnie Harris said Thursday, "The whole community backs it," unquote. 3 days after Hurricane Katrina hit, i.e. Sam, Gretna officers blocked the Mississippi River Bridge that connects their city to New Orleans, exasperating the sometimes troubled relationship with their neighbor. The blockade remained in place into the Labor Day weekend. Now, this says it all. Now they go into, you know, why they did it and all of this type of stuff. You know, this also exposes Nagin, the governor, all of I mean, this obviously, if you're a human being, is a part of a national scandal. But this is how these apparatus of control and demonization fit in within the beast apparatus, and how they collaborate. Many of these Gretna guys are now further deputized by this whole martial law aspect, further intensifying the onslaught. It's all converging. The same people who are involved in this illegal act. By law, these things, types of things are supposed to be illegal. But see, the laws, this stuff doesn't matter. These are henchmen for the beast. Now next, Lori and Larry continue to tell their story facing the state on Highway 90.
Highway 90 was really the only way out of the city, and the only way in that emergency vehicles were using to come and go.
It was on drier land, and it was where the Gretna police came from. These were the Gretna police who told us we would not be able to cross over this bridge.
So we were sort of flabbergasted. I mean, the only way we can interpret that is sort of code words for if you're poor, you're black, you're not getting into our neighborhood. We were all sort of shell-shocked and sort of like, you know, what do we do now and where do we go to?
We were sopping wet, and by this time people were very demoralized. It's like the fourth day, there's no food, there's no water. So our little group kind of came back together and said, well, we really have no choice. We have to find shelter. We can't go back to the command center. We can't go to the Superdome. We can't go to the convention center. What are we going to do? And this is when we decided that we would go to the underpass where there was two concrete barriers that we could go in between and set up and be safe from if there were any traffic. So we regrouped and we gathered. We were about 30 or 40 people that we went to this little safe spot, and we as a group cleaned up the area and made it safer for the children, and we made a little area for some elderly people that were really having a hard time getting around. They were quite ill and quite slow, and many were diabetic.
They were letting people drive across the bridge, but later when we actually were able to cross the bridge on another day, the officials down there had every exit blocked with trucks so that they figured, I guess, that if you could drive across the bridge, you'd keep going and you wouldn't stop in their community. But I guess because we're walking, they knew they wouldn't be able to stop people from walking off the freeway and settling into their community because it was dry ground. There was a lot of dry ground. And most of what who were with us were families. All day long, we sat there about a mile down from the entrance to the bridge, and we saw families, we saw individuals, we saw groups make their way up the incline to be turned away by the Gretna Sheriff's Department with either no, you can't cross, verbal abuse, or shooting in some cases above people's head. So there were literally thousands and thousands of New Orleanians that were prevented from rescuing themselves and getting across the bridge. 20,000 people to Superdome, which we were a few blocks away from. So we were counting the buses, figured 50 people per bus. You know, we were going to count 20,000 people, and then we, you know, would make our way down to take our turn to go on the buses. And we had food and water. So we felt, you know, that we would take care of ourselves, and we could wait this out for, you know, 3, 4, 5 days, whatever it took. One older woman had a little portable radio up to her ear, and the batteries were very low, and she came sort of almost dancing over excitedly. And they're talking about us. They're talking about us on the radio. People are saying, what are you going to do about all those families up on the interstate? And big cheer went up, and the officials had said, don't worry, we'll take care of them. Now, Lori Beth and I talked, and that sounded kind of ominous to me, and I was kind of worried that they would come and try to move us off the freeway. But the majority sentiment was very positive. We felt like, okay, by remaining visible, you know, we would get some help. So the sun finally came out right before it set over the horizon. We're, you know, taking off our shoes and trying to dry off a little bit. And just as it got dusk, Gretna Sheriff pulled up by himself, jumped out of the car with his gun aimed right at us, and was just screaming, just frantically screaming, get off the f***ing freeway, get off the f***ing freeway, get out of here! Pointing a gun at people's face and just screaming pandemonium and just scaring the hell out of all of us. He didn't shoot at us, but we were more scared of him than we were when we were being shot at. He just looked like he had lost it. He was crazed. So people are slowly backing down, sort of backing off, trying to figure out what to do, and people are leaving their belongings behind. And then a helicopter comes down and uses the wind from its blades to start blowing sort of all the stuff that we had built, you know, our beds and the car. It's all cardboard and plastic, so of course it just blows away. And then as we sort of back away, the sheriff starts loading up the food and water in his car.
Once again, this highlights how serious these things are. And how this cop, he wasn't in any fear whatsoever, as he's been backed up by his own city council and mayor, of any reprisal by the state. He wasn't in fear of a reprisal by FEMA or Homeland Security, because this beast apparatus is not really about saving lives. FEMA, as we went over before, was sabotaging stuff. FEMA's part of the whole martial law apparatus. And then these little raggedy coons who are supposed to be people's representatives, but they are servants for the ruling order, only implement these particular things that help drive the fangs of the beast deeper into our necks. So here you have this dog cop taking people's food and, you know, helicopters blowing items away and all of this type of stuff. This just shows you how in line that this whole process was. This guy wasn't worrying about any kind of repercussions from FEMA, you know, even though the last thing that was on his mind was helping human beings. Now, it's also come out that Chirkoff, who's, you know, the head, quote-unquote, of Homeland Security, could have ordered federal agencies into action without any request from state or local, you know, agencies and stuff. But he didn't do it. because their form of an emergency is not basically our lives being in danger. It's basically for the survivability of the empire and for the flexing of the muscle and expansion of the beast muscle of the empire. That's what's really going on. So here you have all of these things outlining how the various agencies that are interconnected with one another, Homeland Security, FEMA, the police apparatus, intensified the misery of people. And then it comes out that Bush was even involved in his little form of a PSYOPs game, where Landau, implores the president to, you know, relieve the unmitigated suffering. Now, he's a senator, Mary Landau, out of Louisiana. And this is what she had to say. Quote, I understand that the U.S. Forest Service had water tanker aircraft available to help douse the fires raging on our riverfront, but FEMA has not yet accepted the aid. When Amtrak offered trains to evacuate significant numbers of victims far more efficiently than buses, FEMA again dragged its feet. Officers of medicine, communication and equipment, and other desperately needed items continue to flow in, only to be ignored by the agency. But perhaps the greatest disappointment stands at the breached 17th Street levee. Touring the critical site yesterday with the president, I saw what I believe to be a real significant effort to get a handle on a major cause of this catastrophe. Flying over this critical spot again this morning, less than 24 hours later, it became apparent that yesterday we witnessed a hastily prepared stage set up for a presidential photo opportunity, and the desperately needed resources we saw were this morning reduced to a single lonely piece of equipment. The good and decent people of Southeast Louisiana and the Gulf Coast, black and white, rich and poor, young and old, deserve far better from their national government. In other words, what happened was they were acting like they were working on the levee when Bush flew with this woman. And then when she flies back over thinking that a lot of workers should be, more work should be accomplished, she finds that it was all a fraud. It was just a psyops game. So from every apparatus you see, these guys, this wasn't a massive failure. This was a massive intentional intensifying so that they could ratchet up the measures that we see taking place now. Now, on the last of these excerpts, let's listen to a former chief of FEMA, Brown, on a CNN show with a Soledad, make excuses about what he does and doesn't know.
We found out about the convention center yesterday. We started diverting supplies to get them fed, too. And now we're finding, literally, as we do evacuations, that more and more people are beginning to manifest and show themselves in areas that we didn't know that they were there. And so we're going to do everything we can to get to them.
You were unaware of the situation at the convention center till yesterday. When yesterday did you become aware?
I think it was yesterday morning when we first found out about it. We were just as surprised as everybody else. We didn't know that the city had used that as a staging area. That shows how difficult communications are. And that's why we moved the USS Japan in, so we could give the mayor a place to actually be able to communicate on a regular basis to give us good intel about what he needs.
How is it possible that you're not, that we're getting better intel than you're getting? We had a crew in the air. We were showing live pictures of the people outside the convention center. We had a National Guardsman who was talking to us, who was telling us he estimated the crowd at 50,000 people. That was at 8 o'clock in the morning yesterday. And we also, we've been reporting that officials have been telling people to go to the convention center if they want any hope of relief. I don't understand how FEMA cannot have this information.
Well, we're busy doing life-saving and life-rescue efforts. We rely upon the state to give us that information. So that I learned about it listening to the news report.
FEMA's been on the ground for 4 days going into the fifth day. Why no massive airdrop of food and water? In Banda Aceh, in Indonesia, they got a food drop 2 days after the tsunami struck.
And that's what we're going to do here, too. And I think if we put it in perspective...
Soledad,
just a moment, please. We're feeding those people in the convention center. We have fed over 150,000 people as of last night. That is happening.
But I guess the point is, as of last night, sir, forgive me, I have to stop you here.
What we're hearing is that we're hearing people's frustration. There are people that are beginning to manifest themselves out of the community that we didn't know that were there. And we're doing everything we can to find those individuals, case by case, to get them help as quickly as possible.
Once again, this is clear that this dude's just a liar. There's no way he didn't know that. The National Guard and other agencies are under their purview, as we went over in the beginning of the FEMA article, which is part of the reasons why I went over it. Because here you have National Guardsmen talking about how they know that there's 50,000 people. They estimate that there's 50,000 people at the particular... convention center, and yet you're going to have him Brown, act like he didn't know that there were people at the convention center. Of course they knew. And as we've gone over on other Hurricane Sam series, that they could have dropped food and what have you. And as Soledad mentioned, they did it 2 days in a foreign country. After 2 days in a foreign country. Here they were days into it and they still hadn't done it. This was intentional. Now at the same time, the convention center, he's pretending that he didn't know about that. This was the scene where many people who had tried to leave the convention center or who bypassed the convention center were getting shot at. So there was all kinds of disturbances. The shooting was by the police, the Gretna police, which they admit. They openly talk about. Now, of course, FEMA and the National Guard knew this. The National Guard would have heard the shots. The National Guard would have reported the shots. This was all intentional. They knew what was going on. You're going to tell me that National Guard didn't know that there were shots going on and that they couldn't hear them and it's happening night and day? You can see these shots. As Shepard mentioned, you can see the overpass from the convention center. People knew what was going on. So this is all a smoke and mirrors game. They wanted to intensify the suffering of these people, so to put in their various apparatus, their WHOs, their martial laws, into the soil of New Orleans even more deeply. And this helps the overall goals of the ruling class that has other ideas for New Orleans, the region, and America. Once again, the beast has landed in New Orleans. Hold on a sec. Here we need more forms of a collective developmental regionalism, which basically means that different regions of a given society have different environments, conditions, resources, and needs. And with those things in mind, human beings in these regions have a need to understand the region they live in and develop a collective regional skills base to survive, sustain, coexist, and support those that live in the region and to maintain a healthy environment. Dependence on the state, which is a mechanism of control by the elite order, only sets one up for a catastrophic downfall that we see happening to our sisters and brothers in New Orleans, and opens up the way for the ruling order to operate its machine of destruction over our very souls and the biosphere of the planet. Our fight for a healthy community is a fight, in a sense, for a healthy planet, both of which the prophets of misery only look upon as commodities to exploit, especially during crises, human-made or otherwise, or intensified. Now, in essence, it's on us to organize ourselves for our own survival, or be on us to bury our own people, and along with that, our future hope of survival. Now, when you look at New Orleans, there are thousands of able-bodied men and women in the area. They are left to decay or destruct within this whole system, within this intentionally designed destructive schools, the Angola slave plantation, or being spatially deconcentrated out. These tapped and untapped talents could be used and must be used in our various communities more in an array of a cooperative community surveillance type skills based in sales and collective developmental regionalism. You know, some volunteer type things could have the responsibility to help coordinate routes out of the regions if a crisis hits, commandeer car lots, and already have coordinated cars, buses, etc. that'll be available. Generators, walkie-talkies, water, and other non-perishables could be used and stored at various community centers for just such an occasion. Healthcare networks set up. by various people, nurses with skills and beyond, beforehand knowing what types of medicines could be needed and used in emergencies, organized around our cells and collective survival actions. Self-defense teams of men and women can be coordinated in unison with these emergency missions. First care services for old, sick, and very young could be used to set up the most vulnerable and susceptible. It only takes a few in a given community to plan for such event, yet it must be coordinated beforehand with certain areas, centers, people's homes, apartments, and various other bases. Not everything in one location, depending on the destruction, it all could be destroyed. But flashlights, batteries, non-perishables, generators, first aid, basic medicines, guerrilla or radio equipment for emergencies, hand radios, etc. Pirate radio stations should consider having a half hour per week or month or however, based on some of these kind of community survival needs and things for your particular region, conducted by, you know, concerned sisters and brothers within the community. Pirate radio itself is a community survival tool, so it's one of the best places to start. And we got to get started quick. Hold on a sec. Celebrating night and day. Blues for the little baby girl who by Sam's whirling winds of mud, water, and toxin, her mother sank away. More blues for New Orleans and for the wino whose last drink was a 20-foot toxin watery high. More blues for my people who witnessed that freedom ship sail right on by. More blues for the black grandmother who was left to die like a broken slave. More blues for the brother horn player whose last song was titled Watery Grave. More blues for my people who were rode out of town like mules. More blues for a people and where genocidal white supremacy is still the golden rule. Now you see why we are still the blues. While beyond the smiles, gold teeth, the bling, the high-flying dunks, the celebrating gyrations in the end zone, the diamond out necklaces, are people's hearts so deep in the color that it's turned the ocean and sky that hue? A people who really just want to be left alone, but are victimized and shackled in every kind of way. As the savage vultures circle around us, and devour our black flesh away. Join the military. You'll be paid. Get your feet back on the ground. Serve your country, is what I heard one dog say. As the country served this now homeless bound brother's mother her last supper at the convention center before she comatose away. So much blues for my people. I don't know where the song begins. So much blues for my people. I don't know where the song ends. So much blues for my people, dealing in this society's original sin. So much blues for my people, who are being ravaged and raped by the devil's kin. Blues for my people, who know this country is a deep rotten lie. More blues for my people, who will be encouraged to give the Democrats another try. Blues for my people who realize that we're running out of time. Whether it's in Haiti, Sudan, or New Orleans, we're entrapped by regimes that kneel to the concepts of profit over people with their toxic religion shoved up their behinds. More blues for people who are trapped in the world's racialized demands. More blues for people who see a world programmed to believe they're less than human. More blues for people who created the blues. More blues for people who are told that their arts were created by people of other colored hues. Blues for my people who are just trying to survive. Blues for my people, whose freedom train has not yet arrived. Blues for my people, who know that it's easy for some people to come down and donate and give. Blues for my people who will realize that many of those same donators don't accept the reality that for us to truly be free, this system can't live. Blues for my people, whose world exists in the tomb. Blues for my people who are forced to leave this world too soon. Our cousins left rotting on Algiers Street. Sisters and brothers, we can't afford to miss another beat. We face some cold, dark days ahead. We must slay the beast and his and her disciples, or our future history, legacy, and culture will be dead. Tracy James, Slave of Old, out.